Good day. The views expressed on the following program are those of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. You are listening to Free Radio Olympia, Olympia, Washington, and this is the Thunderbolt for May 10th, 2019. There is a most excellent local Olympia program that airs every Thursday at noon on KAAOS called Parallel University, hosted by Kim Dobson. There were recent moves by some of our local liberal censors to have Kim's show taken off the air because he criticized Olympia's missing middle plan and exposed the hypocrisy of some of the local liberal promoters of the missing middle plan. Therefore, this week, I'm going to replay my own shows that are critical of the missing middle plan and exposing the hypocrisy of the liberal promoters of the missing middle plan. This first Thunderbolt is called the Non-Missing Middle. Hello, hello, hello. This is the Thunderbolt for November 16th, 2018. I'm very glad you're all here. This week, we're going to start off the show by thunderbolting locally. Here we go. Very early in my life, I had very graphically demonstrated to me the fact that all of us have a limited number of hours in which to experience this life, and that none of us ever knows how many of those hours we are going to get. Therefore, I've never been into wasting too many of those hours. And as a result of this attitude, I spent the vast bulk of my adult life wandering around North America, exploring paths less traveled. And then, when it finally became time to settle down and to feather a nest, for a number of reasons, I chose Olympia. And I have never regretted that decision. Quite the contrary. For the first time in my life, I have not only become part of a community, but it is a vibrant, smart, and engaged community consisting of activists and students and artists and public employees and anarchists and various other misfits who all dance together in this big, wonderful symphony. But there is a snake in the garden. A bunch of privileged white people have decided they want to move to Olympia. And there is an existential danger that they are about to price people like me and many of my friends out of our financial ability to be able to live here. And what really makes my head explode is that these people seem to feel they have some kind of right to come in here and displace and therefore destroy our community just because they have money and we don't. The developers who profit from developing such places use their money producing slick propaganda to mislead the gullible and to corrupt the corruptible and to entice the greedy. And now we have city officials and even local Olympia service providers promoting an atrocity called the missing middle as some kind of solution to this problem. The missing middle plan is a plot by the Home Builders Association to cash in on the gentrification of Olympia. Evidently, privileged white people don't already have enough cool places to hang out, and now they want to convert Olympia into a little mini Bellevue South. Now, this missing middle plan basically consists of building more housing for privileged white people whilst completely ignoring the ever-expanding tent city that is taking over our downtown. And do not tell me that this plan will do anything but expand that tent city even further, because I know how these things work. And unlike in some cities, the Olympia version of the missing middle plan does not make even token requirements for any affordable housing. And if they don't require it, then it absolutely won't happen. It often doesn't even happen when they do require it. The city has also done no research concerning potential parking problems, traffic congestion, the overcrowding of schools, the loss of green space and wildlife habitat, and the increased danger of a storm water flooding that their plan would generate. Other than token and empty expressions of concern, there are no plans for actually addressing any of these concerns, even though every one of these concerns are serious concerns that deserve the serious consideration. That they're absolutely not getting from the current Olympia City Council. And besides, in most cases, the construction of new housing is far more expensive than maintaining existing housing. So the affordability issue starts making impact right out of the gate with this plan. The aforementioned city officials will tell you that providing more housing for privileged white people will lower housing costs for everyone else. And they will tell you this even though what almost always actually happens is the complete opposite. Yes, according to Economics 101, expanding the supply will indeed bring down prices, except when there is never ceasing demand. And as long as demand continues to exceed supply, the supply will continue to be unavailable to those who cannot afford to demand. What the missing middle plan also does is to literally destroy the character of already existing and established neighborhoods. Their plan is to greatly expand density in the neighborhoods nearest downtown, which means tearing down large numbers of those quaint old houses and then filling those spaces with condos and or duplexes and or various other forms of high-density housing that often looks as if some alien had dropped some ugly, gaudy, futuristic sculpture made of glass, steel, and plastic right down in the middle of an otherwise really nice neighborhood that had formerly had a lot of character. Promoters of the missing middle make several key assumptions that sound good when you hear them, but none of which stand up to actual scrutiny. Such as their claim that the missing middle plan will provide more affordable housing, when actually it will eliminate a good deal of what we already have. It requires an assumption that there is some unmet need for more housing for privileged white people, when actually most of them are doing just fine where they are right now. And there are no studies anywhere that are talking about any pent-up demand for middle-income housing. None. Researchers have searched. It is low-income and homeless people who actually do not have enough homes to go around. There are a lot of studies about that. Proponents of the missing middle also invariably forget the plan for new parks, schools, or even sidewalks for all of these new people. They also invariably forget the plan someplace for all of these new white condo dwellers to park all of the extra cars that they invariably bring along with them. And ultimately, the fact is that the housing problem is merely a symptom of the deeper problem of the insanely disproportionate distribution of wealth amongst the members of our society. A few people have a lot, while a lot have nothing. And until we fix that, housing will invariably continue to be a problem. According to Mark Twain, you should never pick a fight with someone who buys ink by the barrel. So, dealing with conservatives is in some ways very easy, as it almost always possible to predict what position they will take upon any given issue. All you need to do is figure out whatever the most cold-hearted, mean-spirited, obtuse, and cruel position it is possible to take on any given issue. And just like a homing pigeon, that is right where they go. It almost seems like instinct. Liberals, on the other hand, exasperate me because, with but a couple of exceptions, on the whole, I support nearly every stated position that the liberals have on nearly every individual issue. That is, of course, distinct from the actual positions that are actually taken by Democrats once they get elected. And I also understand that liberal support is necessary in order to actually get anything done. And I understand that some liberals do actually do a lot of good things, and that a lot of them are good-hearted people doing what they feel is the right thing to do. However, when it comes to actually dealing with liberals, the issues are not always the issue. So I have finally been hearing a lot of concerns being expressed by a wide variety of commentators from a wide variety of perspectives, both left and right, concerning the political polarization that our country is currently experiencing. We are splitting into opposing enemy camps, and we are not talking to each other, just like the machine wants. And that polarization is happening within the ranks of both the left and the right, also just like the machine wants. As long as we are fighting with each other, we continue to ignore them. So I have been calling out this polarization as something that should be a central concern of ours for many years now. So those of you who have been with me since 2012 may remember that during the election that year, I wasted quite a bit of time on right-wing websites trashing Republicans, and on left-wing websites trashing Democrats. I was trying to get people on both sides of the political divide to abandon both parties. And I found the responses to these posts to be quite revealing. The right-wingers almost invariably responded with their pre-packaged, fact-free crap, but they almost always stuck to the issues. They very rarely became personal. The left-wingers, on the other hand, almost invariably completely ignored whatever issues or facts that I was presenting, and instead, they would immediately launch into personal attacks on me, usually by insulting me and or calling me childish names. Now this was consistent. There were occasional exceptions, but these were almost invariably the responses I got from both sides. If anything, the right-wingers were usually eager for debate, whilst the left-wingers almost never had any interest in debate. The conservatives almost always stuck to the issues, while the liberals almost always attacked the messenger and completely ignored the issues. And here is the best way to tell when a liberal has no argument. They will say this. Yawn. Yawn. Yes, that is the stereotypical, arrogant, condescending, liberal manner of letting you know that they are so far superior to you and that their perspectives are so much deeper than yours that they need not deign to even lower themselves to acknowledge, much less debate you. The implication being that you have absolutely nothing to say that has any value, and you can completely be dismissed as a non-entity. And liberals wonder why everybody loathes them so much. So anyway, I recently posted in my newsletter a critique of the Olympia Standard podcast. I lavishly praised where I felt such praise was due, and I critiqued where I felt critique was due. I spent time and thought, and I think I raised some valid points of debate, especially on the gentrification and homelessness issues. I sought to perhaps widen their horizons and to perhaps provide some perspectives that they had not previously considered. I think I raised some very important local issues that need to be discussed and debated, and since I happen to have created a widely read venue suitable for public debate, then I think that was a good place to discuss such issues. I was hoping that maybe I could provoke a response from them that would maybe serve to widen my own horizons and maybe provide some perspectives that I had not previously considered. Maybe there could be some clarifications and explanations, or maybe they could fill me on some relevant facts that I did not know about. Whatever. I was open for a discussion and or a debate upon reformist strategies versus revolutionary strategies and or upon the costs and benefits of gentrification and or about whatever. While that was what I was hoping, I figured that it was probably much more likely that they would simply ignore me. However, they chose to do neither. They evidently felt the need to take things personal and to deploy the classical, stereotypical, liberal dismissal combined with the personal insult. Yes, kids, this was the response from the Olympia Standard. Yawn. Oh, wow. Somebody yawned at me. I'm emotionally devastated. I will assume that that response came from Danny Madrone, though the responder was only identified to me as the Olympia Standard. So in my critique in my newsletter, I mentioned that while I held Danny Madrone in the highest regard when it comes to her work, that I really do not like her very much personally. Well, both of those facts are still true, only the first is now much less so, while the second is now much more so. So it's time for a quick station break, but first I want to let Olympia listeners know that I do not have a calendar this week, and I probably will not next week as well. My personal life is in turmoil right now, but after this period, I should be able to get back to the normal schedule soon. As for now, though, the Thunderbolt will be back in a minute. The views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. So apologists for the police state will tell you that if you have nothing to hide, then you have no reason to fear government surveillance. Or translation, you should have no worries just as long as you are a good German. Excuse me, but I am not the problem around here. So let's say, just for the sake of argument, let us assume that you and I have been personal friends for many years, and that you know me to be an honest and good-hearted person. Next, let us conjecture that I were to approach you and ask you for all of your passwords, for all of your bank accounts and email accounts and social media accounts, and also asked you for access to all of your medical records and for the ability to track your phone and or your car everywhere that you go and the ability to record all of your phone calls so that I can reference them anytime I want into the foreseeable future. Well, I am thinking you would tell me that I was nuts. And I am thinking that the people who claim that you need not fear government surveillance as long as you have nothing to hide would also tell me that I was nuts. And so I find myself wondering if they are saying that they would not trust a trusted friend with all of that information, yet evidently they do trust the frigging government with all of that information. Really? And speaking of governments, I am outraged. for the district attorney for the city of Seattle is going to take one of my misdemeanor convictions away from me. He has announced that the city of Seattle is going to expunge all misdemeanor convictions for possession of marijuana that have occurred within their jurisdiction, which happens to include one of mine. Now, I earned my police record. I am proud of my police record. Now, I spent serious time acquiring that police record, I will have you know. And now, you have some bureaucratic boob over in the Seattle City Hall take it upon himself to just expunge my record willy-nilly without even asking me what I may think about it. This is pure arrogance. Call his office now and object. Actually, for the benefit of newer listeners who are unfamiliar with my tongue-in-cheek method of disseminating information, I guess I should explain at this point that I am indulging in pure sarcasm here, and I do not actually want you to call the Seattle DA to complain about this. His stated reason for expunging all of the misdemeanor marijuana convictions is because Seattle's marijuana convictions disproportionately affected people of color, and that those folks should have that burden removed from their lives. And that is a goal that I am actually fully in support of, and I actually commend the Seattle DA for doing this. And if anything, you should call his office and thank him. And meanwhile, spokespersons for the Rumps non-administration have just announced that the United States plans to spend over $1 trillion, that's trillion with a T, in order to upgrade our nuclear weapon arsenal. Wow. Awesome. That's probably the very last thing in the entire freaking universe that we actually need. And it's only going to cost us $1 trillion. What a deal. Now, I just heard Amy Goodman on Democracy Now blame this insanity upon the Rump. Actually, though, that policy is pure Barack Obama. The Rump is merely carrying on. Newsflash here, kids. Both the Democrats and the Republicans work for the same Goldman Sachs. And by the way, at the risk of sounding obvious, I would point out that $1 trillion is a lot of money. I would point out that $1 trillion is probably a lot more money than you think it is. In order to demonstrate this, let us first consider $1 million, a little easier figure to wrap your head around. And then, let us consider how much money $1 million is, and what your school or what the ACLU could do with $1 million. Next, let us consider the fact that 1 million seconds is a little over 11 days. that 1 billion seconds with a B is just over 32 years. And that 1 trillion seconds with a T is just over 32,000 years. Yes, kids, 1 million is 11 days. 1 trillion is 32,000 years. Like I said, $1 trillion is a lot of money. And while they aren't getting nearly as good a deal from the Democrats, the immigrant community did recently manage to demonstrate yet once again that the entire substance of the entire Democratic Party consists of nothing more than empty words. Yes, kids, after months of soaring rhetoric insisting that there was no budget deal without a DACA deal, Senate Democrats demonstrated the level of their commitment to their empty words and threw the DACA kids under the bus by passing the Republicans' new budget deal without a DACA deal after all. And meanwhile, over in the House of Representatives, or the People's House, Democrat leader Nancy Pelosi evidently felt that since the DACA kids had just received such a royal screwing from the Senate, then that meant they thus warranted an extra heavy-duty bonus level of empty words, as she subsequently made a passionate 8-hour speech on the floor of the House in order to demonstrate to the DACA community that actually the Democrats still had their backs. Never fear. However, when later asked if she was going to seriously whip this issue and insist that all her members vote against the new Republican budget deal unless the DACA kids were taken care of, well, Ms. Pelosi joined Senate Democrats concerning the level of their commitment to their empty words and replied that actually, no. She wasn't going to take it that far. And 73 House Democrats joined all of the Republicans and voted with them to pass their new budget bill. One thing I will say for the Democrats, they are consistent.
Welcome to part 2 of the Thunderbolt. Once again, we are not only going to thunderbolt locally, but we're going to thunderbolt personally. I would like to start off this thunderbolt with the very personal fact that I have lived my entire life on magic. And the thing about magic is that you are in almost complete control of your personal magic, even as your magic almost completely controls you, both at the same time. Now, I don't make any claims to understand how that works, nor even how that can work, but I base my observations about the workings of magic upon decades of observation of the phenomenon, and upon the fact that I literally lived on this phenomenon. A few things are clear, in spite of my failure to understand how it works. Magic seems to mean that you get what you need rather than what you want, which is not always the same thing. And magic seems to mean that you get what you need rather than what you deserve, which is also not always the same thing. It is often quite the opposite, in fact. Yes, kids, You can fight and push and battle to make something happen, but ultimately, you are always going to end up wherever your magic takes you, both in spite of whatever you do and because of whatever you do, both at the same time. And that is why I sometimes fight so hard. Because even though I know I am being led inexorably toward wherever I need to be, I also know that at the same time, I am by my actions and words determining exactly where that place will be. I actually find great comfort in these facts, especially in times of turmoil and change, such as are happening right now, for instance, both in my personal life and in the world around me. And here's another thing about magic. In this universe, irony abounds. For instance, recently I very suddenly found myself facing my own housing crisis, and dealing with this crisis has, ironically, provided me with some very interesting observations concerning the gentrification of Olympia, and, ironically, it has turned out that I have now become unhoused myself, and I am currently residing out of my Chevy Suburban and a storage locker. So you may remember all the way back to about half an hour ago when I started off this week's show with a piece that I actually recorded a couple of weeks ago called The Non-Missing Middle, in which I predicted that I was about to get priced out of my ability to live in Olympia. Well, ironically, since that time, I learned that my prediction was coming true much sooner even than I expected. So I would like to now share a few anecdotes that I believe help to illustrate the current housing crisis in Olympia. When my roommate gave notice that he was moving out, I placed ads for a new roommate.
One, two, three, go!
And I received almost 20 responses, many from people who sounded somewhat desperate and whose numbers included a mother and her teenage daughter who were currently living in an unheated motorhome, and another working mother of a 2-year-old who is in imminent danger of having to move into her car. I am still getting calls. I got 2 more while I was writing this piece. So my original plan was to just take over the lease from my roommate. I assumed my roommate would convey this information to the landlord when he gave his notice. But he did not. Therefore, by the time I contacted the landlord, I learned that not only was he not expecting my call, but they had already listed the place for rent. In addition, I learned at this time that evidently I do not make enough money to qualify to sign a lease. In the 1.5 years that I had been living there, I had never once been late with the rent, but evidently, that fact was irrelevant.
Back,
also learned, surprise, surprise, the landlord was also raising the rent by another $100 per month. I sometimes find myself wondering what they're going to do when no one can afford to be alive anymore. This meant that I personally needed to both come up with another $50 per month. Not impossible, but a serious pain in the ass. Plus, I also now needed to find a roommate who could qualify to sign the lease. I assured the landlord that I could and would find someone who could and would qualify to sign the lease. And he seemed, if not okay with that, at least he did not nix the plan either. Since I had almost 20 people who were expressing interest in the room, I foresaw little difficulty finding someone compatible that could and would be willing to sign the lease. But I foresaw incorrectly. When I informed all my potential roommates that they needed to qualify to sign the lease, virtually all of them dropped off. Of all these people, there were two, TWO, two of them, that could qualify to sign the lease. And one of them had already found another place by the time I got back in touch with him. The other one worked out, though. We met at a coffee shop. He vibed great. We clicked, and I breathed a sigh of relief as I contacted the landlord to let him know that I had a firm commitment from someone who could and would sign the lease. But this was when I learned that in our previous conversation, the landlord had failed to inform me of the somewhat relevant fact that he was planning to renovate the place and that he wanted me out of there in any case. I have no idea why he didn't just say that in the first place. So WTF, my roommate, my landlord, are people just afraid to tell other people things they know they don't want to know or hear or something? Do these people not know that their negligence, thoughtlessness, and disrespect totally screws other people up? Or do they simply not care? I would not even think of doing crap like that to anyone. So is dealing with people in such manners the freaking norm these days? Or what? And this means that I am now looking for a place to live when I don't meet income requirements and when I have no rental history of any kind, and I am looking for a place to live when I have a large collection of marijuana felonies, and I am looking for a place to live in an environment where there are literally dozens of people seriously competing for any and every affordable place to live that is on the market. And so I am considering Shelton as an alternative. It is reportedly much easier to find a place there. And I have already confirmed that they are much cheaper when you do find them. And the landlords there are reportedly not nearly as picky. But if Shelton doesn't work out, then feel free to drop by my Chevy Suburban sometime and say hi. I'll be around. And a final note, in this universe, irony abounds. If I were to move to Shelton, then that would mean I would be representing the Vanguard on the path to the eventual gentrification of Shelton. Pretty soon, all the cool artists and musicians and activists will all be living in Shelton because they can't afford Olympia anymore. And then all the yuppies will see the cool cultural scene that we have created in Shelton, and then they will decide they all want to come and live there instead. And thus, they will inadvertently come and destroy yet another good thing by loving it to death. Just like they're going to Olympia right now. Pretty soon, Olympia will consist of wall-to-wall condos and townhouses with absolutely no character or culture whatsoever. So, while my thus far theoretical arrival in Shelton would be unlikely to shake many trees, nor cause much, if any, consternation amongst the established population. The fact is that if they like Shelton the way it is now, then my arrival should probably utterly terrify them. Oh my God, here come the gentrifiers. Hide the children. Yeah. Well, maybe let's just not tell them quite yet. Let them get used to the idea first. Shall we? And in the meanwhile, it's time to get to work. All right. Hollow Earth and Free Radio Olympia listeners get another 6 minutes, but otherwise, that's it for the show this week. See you next week. The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt. Nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com, and we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day.